Hello, and welcome to the OMFIF podcast, a weekly discussion on key trends in investment and economic policy from some of the world's leading commentators. On this week's episode, we talk about the threat of globalization and international relations. This is Ryan Delore from London, and today we talk to Sherve Williams, Senior Executive Director at Mighton Group and author of the book The Retreat of Globalization. Welcome.
Hello there.
Globalization seems to be increasingly under attack in the international system, with anti-establishment and populist movements gaining traction in many parts of the world. As new leaders are elected on a more nationalist and anti-globalist platform, questions are raised about how the international order is changing and what the future holds for globalism. So, Sherve, are we entering a new era for international relations, and is globalization under threat today?
I think we are. I mean, I think we need to go back a little bit to put some context on this. I think the last 30 years have been terrific in terms of world growth. I think that has been down to the globalization of world trade, which has boosted cross-border trade and enhanced world growth, specifically of large and smaller companies. And as we've seen that, as the cost of goods imports have come down in many cases, cost of your cameras, T-shirts and other products continues to fall, that's more than offset the local inflationary pressures. So underlying government costs of debt have come down. Inflation's come down. Interest rates have come down, and that's made it easier to finance growth as well. So I think the combination of the use of debt and the growth of cross-border trade has boosted world growth and led to many years of not just good growth, but also cash generation, tax take. I do think that's coming to an end, though. I think the distortion of quantitative easing, it works by distorting market prices, led to a recovery from the financial crisis in 2008. But I think its retention over the last 10 years has led to a distortion of market prices, and that's now leading to productivity stagnating, and that's leading to a change in trends going forward.
Yeah, it's interesting how QE has had an effect on markets, and especially 10 years on, we can now actually see what the midterm to long-term effects of that are. Looking at the further historic context and the change in the international order that have taken place since the Bretton Woods system and the rise of neoliberalism, where are we today in the globalization process? What are some of the major processes at play in changing the global order, and what is the globalization agenda?
So what's been interesting, I think, over the last 10 years is that the distortion of market prices has led to a misallocation of capital. So companies perhaps growing their dividends at the expense of long-term investment have often been favoured in share price terms over those which are continuing to invest on a long-term basis. And that's meant really that CapEx hasn't ever quite picked up as much as we would have liked. And most particularly, many corporates aren't generating the ongoing cash generation growth, which they would have normally had sort of prior to 2008. And I think that's really added risk to the system. Companies are now distributing dividends probably at lower margins of safety. But more important than that, I think many corporates aren't seeing the growth in that cash flow, and they're struggling to pay good regular wage rises. And that's led really to many of the electorate now beginning to question, when they're asked, whether they want more of the same. You know, if we haven't had a good pay rise for the last 10 years, then the chances are when you get asked about Brexit or Trump, or indeed the five-star movement in Italy, you vote for the change rather than the continuity. And I think that's leading to a profound change in the electoral agenda. And I think that will be followed up with a major change in the economic agenda going forward as well.
So there seems to be a backlash against globalization, particularly in the form of populism in the US, in Europe, in Latin America as well now, and in other places in the world. So where do you think this has come from, and does it signify a real change in international relations as well?
So I think where it's come from is that I think that although debt sort of smoothed the system over the last 30 years, and even not everyone enjoyed a rise in wealth, I think that that's becoming a more significant issue now when debt costs are starting to rise. Interest rates have been rising in the US, have been rising in some of the emerging markets too. And I think that's leading to many people feeling that they really are struggling to make ends meet. And I think that's bringing things to a head as we speak at the moment. Specifically going forward, I think this does really lead to a major change in trend. I think that when you get a change in the political climate and most particularly the economic policies going forward, when you get new electorate leaders starting to talk about protectionism and those kinds of features, then I think we can say that the previous trends we got used to for the last 30 years, which many people treat as normal, can be seen as more exceptional. And more importantly, going forward, the times going forward are going to look more, in my view, like the 70s and the 60s when we had stagflation, recessions, rising inflation, unsettled equity markets. And I think those are the features probably going forward which we're going to see more in future.
And do you think that QE has played a role in this process as well? I mean, some people say that it has led to an increase in inequality, especially in the US, but also in other places, because it's pushed up asset prices. So would you say that QE is partly to blame for this, or is that a myth?
I certainly do. I mean, the question of whether it's the principal problem or just one of the contributors, I think it's one of the leading factors. It has distorted market prices. It works by distorting market prices from the start. That's the whole point. It meant that we could rescue the banks and save the financial system from closing down and people being thrown out of work at that stage. But the problem is it's been retained, in my view, for too long. It's been too easy for politicians to extend QE because they don't see the cost of it. And it's only now we're beginning to recognize the cost, which, as I say, is down to a distortion of market prices and therefore favoring companies which have been, in many cases, investing in short-term stuff rather than long-term stuff. And I think that's the key driver. And that's become a significant problem now because we're just not getting the wage growth. Yes, wage, you know, we've seen unemployment come down around the world. Marvelous. But unfortunately, a lot of people aren't getting a decent wage growth, and that's becoming a serious issue.
So how much of the anti-globalization narrative that's advocated by Trump, but also by others, is actual policy, and how much of it is merely rhetoric? And would you say it's easy for global leaders to change the current state of globalism and economic interdependence globally?
I think that it's, at this stage, it's uncertain as to whether we have less globalization going forward, perhaps no globalization, or outright protectionism. Clearly, we're going to see that over the coming months and years. But what it does permit is for many of the leaders to start a more nationalistic agenda. And I think that's what we're seeing in Trump, but also in Europe and Asia, as we talked about, even South America, as you mentioned. So I think it's that nationalist agenda which feeds perhaps electoral support in the short term, perhaps, you know, overly simplistic solutions, which unfortunately unwind some of the good work going on elsewhere. And the more that those people who are nationalistic succeed in the short term, the more it makes it harder for other international leaders to continue to advocate globalization and the benefits of cross-border trade. So I do think that feature is leading to a tension in geopolitics and probably a rising risk of nationalist interests conflicting with each other.
Looking at trade, do you think that globalization processes are currently being reversed by, for example, tariffs under Trump or by the potential no-deal Brexit in the UK? And do you think that either of these have any serious consequences for international relations?
I think they could do, is the answer to that. It just adds tension. And when you get the status quo being broken down, it's hard to know how it's going to settle down in the future. There will be a period of flux during that period of change, and then things will settle and probably harden into something which then remains in place on a sort of 10 and 20 year basis. And we just don't know at this stage how it's going to harden. We're right in that sort of flux, that plastic period when we're getting real change coming through. And that's meaning that different leaders and the ability of leadership to make a difference is disproportionately important at this stage. The opportunity for individual nations to have a significant effect on this agenda at a time when there is flux is much, much greater than when perhaps there's a static kind of established order and momentum already in the marketplace. So I think we're in that period of flexibility. I think that is leaving the agenda more open. But of course, that does mean the outcome could be much more wide ranging than it is in normal times.
Focusing on the UK for just a moment, there appears to be, if you were to believe the media, a real danger of a no-deal scenario in terms of Brexit. It's currently not looking likely that it will get through Parliament in its current form, the transition deal. So what would you say, how catastrophic for the financial markets would it be if we were to end up with a no-deal Brexit?
I think as with all of these things, again, there's ranges of grey. There's ranges of grey to no Brexit deal. There's ranges of grey associated with the May proposals. There's even ranges of grey associated with any second referendum, if there ever was one. So I think these features, there may be certain risks which be heightened, but I think other risks will be modified by bilateral agreements, perhaps in different areas across different nations across the EU. So I don't think it's just black and white in that regard. However, personally, I think the other issues to do with the reduction of market liquidity as quantitative easing is being phased out by central banks and with the setbacks we've seen with Chinese growth coming under pressure, particularly in industrial production over the last 6 months, as China's borne down on its inflationary pressures and corporate cash loans over recent months. I think those features probably are going to be more important than Brexit. I think Brexit will be a significant event for Europe and the UK, but I think those other features may be more significant again.
Yeah, I think the whole Brexit debate also puts into question the role of international institutions, of course, what's the future of the EU, but also outside of that, taking the IMF and the WTO as an example. Can you say something about how their position and international standing has changed as a result of globalization, as well as the current discussion about globalization and rise of protectionism?
The key issue which I worry about as an investor is that we've got fewer margins of safety. You know, if we do slip into a world recession for whatever reason, perhaps because of a geopolitical event or or possibly because of a setback, a significant setback on a world economy, then the nightmare for us all is what do we do about it? You can cut interest rates to some extent in the US, but many of the developed nations already got super low, ultra low interest rates already. So the chances are if we slip into recession, get used to it. It may be that we're in a much longer recession and by a number of quarters than usual. Specifically, it may be quite a shallow recession, nothing as deep as 2008, but it may be much more sustaining and long-lasting. And those companies, particularly with too much debt, may find that actually, whilst they've got 2 or 3 years to roll their debt, when they get to the end of that period, they find that actually it's getting harder to roll that debt. They need to sell assets. They may need to raise emergency capital. They may need to cut dividends. I think these features are likely to be really difficult, pernicious issues to deal with. And it could lead to more companies going bust, more people becoming unemployed, generally more nationalism in the long term. I think these are features which are working together, which are a real worry. Overall, I think the margins of safety within the corporate sector are more limited and indeed in the central banks, and that is leading to the downside risk of a geopolitical event to be much more substantial perhaps than usual.
And to sort of turn the question around a bit, do you think that globalism and the pursuit of globalization itself might pose a threat to the international order?
Well, I think what's happened about globalization is that there have been winners and losers. It's been generally positive for most economies, more economic growth, more government tax take, more ability to spend money on social care and other factors. But I think it's also led to more inequality. I think that's led to a position where, you know, there's more risk that you do get social unrest. And that could become an issue which works against the opportunity for the political leaders to find the right solutions going forward. So in that way, I think globalization has been successful in certain ways, but has also perhaps got the seeds of its own demise built in to the long-term issue. I think it does obviously lead to more geopolitical risk, more international tension, and perhaps less stability in the global world order.
So how do you see the future of globalization? Can you perhaps identify some future trends and challenges on the path of globalization?
Yes, I mean, the one thing which I have been anxious about is, as an investor, is how do we steer our clients' capital through these periods of change? If markets do become unsettled, if long-term returns are subnormal, and that is a side effect of ultra-low interest rates, which is where we are at this stage, there may be lots of volatility up ahead, and there may be some opportunity up ahead, but how do we find the best path? And I think what's interesting about that is if you look back to the 70s and the 60s, and indeed the 50s, these were periods when there were deflationary and inflationary pressures, when there were frequent recessions, when there were many anti-business governments, and of course, it was a period when certain economies, mature economies like the UK, had a long-term decline in our exchange rate. So it's not as though we haven't had some of these challenges before, but one of the issues which was interesting about that period was you saw many of the companies with smallness and agility in management teams, those people able to take advantage of change and move their business models accordingly, and alongside with that, the ability to raise capital, external capital, so they could fund their investments into these assets, could take advantage of that uncertainty. And we certainly, if we go back to the 70s and the 60s, one of the features is you see the largest companies having generating a return, but actually the best returns most years, certainly on a rolling basis, consistently through that period in the UK, for example, were the smallest 10% of the market. The largest 90% had their own challenges. Time when the world's not growing, big companies really struggle to gallop. So there's a really big challenge for many companies, large companies, particularly those with a lot of debt, those which aren't investing enough, those which aren't generating productivity improvement. They come under existential threats in certain cases. Small companies aren't immune to all of that. Clearly, many of those could go bust too. But specifically, those which do find an opportunity can sometimes harvest, sometimes get disproportionate advantage, and you find the very smallest companies could work well. So one of the exciting features about the future is that maybe there'll be a wider range of companies succeeding on the quoted market. Specifically, many of those companies will be outside of the mainstream dominance of this sort of fast-moving consumer goods, banks and insurance companies, pharmaceuticals, and perhaps in a wider range of sectors. And that may lead to genuine productivity improvement again, renewed productivity improvement. Again, more tax take for governments, specifically more employment growth, long-term productive employment, and ultimately, of course, better returns for investors. So I think we're in a really unusual period when perhaps some of those trends, which we really haven't seen for the last 30 years, become reestablished.
So Shafeer, thanks very much for your comments on the developments in globalization worldwide, both in the US as well as here in Europe. I think there's a lot going on, and I think this has really given us some insight into what might happen in 2019. Next feature podcast examines developments in US-China relations. This will be available on the OnFIF channel on Tuesday, so you can download it once it has been broadcast or subscribe to our channel. If you've enjoyed the program, then please do leave us a review.